Shalom, welcome to Ash JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, we have now created a new group called Zionists Against Clinton. And it's just an internet group. It's a group on the internet called Zionists Against Clinton. It's an organization that really is part of JTF. And we now have ZionistsAgainstClinton.org and ZionistsAgainstClinton.com. So anybody that's interested in Zionists Against Clinton, they can now reach our news page, our great news page, if they go to ZionistsAgainstClinton.org or ZionistsAgainstClinton.com. In addition to JTF.org. JTF.org, of course, is still going to be our domain name, our main domain name, but we now have two extra domain names to represent the Zionists Against Clinton organization that we're creating. Why did we use the name Zionists Against Clinton instead of Jews Against Clinton? The reason we use the name Zionists Against Clinton is because we want non-Jews who also oppose Hillary Clinton and who also support Israel to be able to join with us, because you can be a Gentile Zionist, you can be a Christian Zionist. So we want non-Jewish Zionists to also feel comfortable joining us. When we said Jews against Clinton, we did a couple of videos. We've done several videos already saying Jews against Clinton. And of course, we always say you don't have to be Jewish to join Jews against Clinton, but it's a little awkward when you're saying Jews against Clinton and you have a lot of non-Jewish members in the group. It sounds, I don't know, maybe people will think it's awkward. So to make sure that it doesn't seem awkward, we figured that Zionists Against Clinton better represents the full range of members and supporters and activists that we hope to attract in what we're going to be doing in the election campaign. Because what are we? We're basically a movement that is opposing Hillary Sodom Clinton and her candidacy and trying to defeat her. We also happen to support Ted Cruz, but that's an issue that has nothing to do with this particular title. We're a movement that supports defeating Hillary Clinton in the election, and we want to do it with a pro-Israel agenda. In other words, making it clear that Hillary Clinton is going to pay a price for her anti-Semitism and for the fact that she's against Israel. We want all politicians to know that support for Israel and support on Jewish issues like the survival of Israel or like preventing Iran from becoming a nuclear terrorist power, that positions on these issues are important and that there are voters who will make politicians pay a price if they go against us on these issues and will reward politicians if they're in our favor on these issues. So we want to give Jewish Zionists and Christian Zionists and Gentile Zionists a place to go to if they want to deliver that message to politicians. And yes, again, Zionists Against Clinton is focusing on defeating Hillary Clinton. It happens to be we also support Ted Cruz, but we figured that at this stage, if we call the group Zionists Against Clinton, if we make that the name of the political organization that we're creating, that will initially draw in more people. In other words, more people will come in, and when they come in, they're going to see that in addition to opposing Clinton, we also happen to support Ted Cruz for the Republican presidential nomination. I think that's actually a better way to help Ted Cruz. We're the anti-Clinton group, and we're fighting against Clinton. And then when people come in, they see that the people who are fighting aggressively against Clinton on the issue of Israel are Ted Cruz supporters. I think that's going to help Ted Cruz even more than if we just said Jews for Cruz or Zionists for Cruz, even though we're also going to do Jews for Cruz. There's no question about that. But right now, I think we'll get a wider variety of people coming in if we say Zionists against Clinton. And when they come in, they'll see we're not hiding the fact that in addition to that, we also support Ted Cruz. So I just wanted people to know that. I think you've seen that we've been doing videos. The past couple of weeks, we've released videos against Hillary Sodom Clinton, and we've released videos in support of Ted Cruz. So that's going to continue, and it's going to intensify, God willing. You're going to see a lot more of that during the next year and a half until Election Day. And again, I don't view this just as the presidential election. The presidential election is very important, vitally important, vitally important. God forbid if Hillary Sodom Clinton is elected president. I do believe that means that Iran will very likely get a nuclear arsenal, not just one nuclear bomb, but numerous nuclear bombs, and the threat to Israel's survival and the threat of a nuclear holocaust against America are both very real threats if that happens, God forbid. So I think that this is a very important election for that reason, and I think that in the Republican nomination process, it's also very important that we get a candidate like Ted Cruz who will take a strong stand on that issue. And of course, the survival of Israel, the importance of preventing the creation of a so-called Palestinian state, and the survival of Israel and pressure on Israel to go back to the pre-1967 borders, all of that, as we all know, that's also at stake here, because Hillary Sodom Clinton is a third Obama term. On the Middle East, on issues involving Israel and Iran, on those issues, Hillary Clinton is the same as Barack Hussein Obama and John Kerry. In fact, the anti-Semite Hillary Clinton started the Obama-Kerry policies when she was Secretary of State during the first 4 years of Obama's administration. She's the one that started the negotiations with Iran. She's the one that bragged that for 45 minutes she was screaming at Netanyahu not to let Jews live in Jerusalem. She's always been a Jew hater. She's always been an evil beast. So on the issues of Israel and Iran, there's no question it's going to be the same story as what we have with Obama, and we just can't afford that. If we're going to have a situation like that where Iran is getting so close to developing a nuclear bomb and all the dangerous situations that we're facing, I really think that the very survival of Israel and the very survival of the Jewish people is being placed in grave jeopardy at this point. I mean, this is a very important election, a critical election. And in America, I don't have to tell you that Hillary Clinton will continue executive orders granting full amnesty to all the illegal aliens. She's going to open up the borders even more. That's the end of America. That's the end of America. It's national suicide for America. So she'll destroy America. She wants to destroy Israel. She's not going to succeed in completely destroying Israel because God won't allow that. But she can create a situation where the lives of millions of Jews, God forbid, could be in danger. So we've got quite a difficult situation ahead of us if she wins. And according to the polls, she's still leading. She's still the leading candidate, despite the scandals over the Clinton Foundation bribery money that she's been taking, and despite all the corruption. The American people don't care, apparently, about corruption, because, at least a lot of them don't, because we saw during the 8 years when Bill Clinton was president, he was one of the slimiest, most corrupt people ever to hold public office. He and his filthy piglet wife, those two animals, when they polluted the office of the White House, the hideous things that they did, the corrupt practices that they engaged in, were just unbelievable. Anyone who cares at all about honesty or integrity in government, or about having public officials that are not complete crooks, could never even think about supporting the Clintons. And yet, they stayed in power for 8 years, and she's now, here she is running again. Same corruption, new scandals. With them, it's always a new scandal, always more money grubbing actions, and willing to sell out the national security of the United States and endanger the whole world just so that they can enrich themselves. That's what the Clintons are all about. And according to the polls, most Americans are still supporting them. Now, it's true her support has gone down somewhat. And this does give us hope, though. If this continues and if we expose this properly, there is a chance to defeat her. I think we have a chance to defeat her. Can I promise that we'll defeat her? I can't promise anything. I can't promise anything. The voters in the next election will have free will, and there are all types of events that could come up that could influence things one way or the other. The news media, obviously the left-wing news media supports her. So, I can't promise anything. But I think we have a chance, and it gives us new hope. It gives us new hope when we see that she is, again, involved in more scandal. It just never ends. It was the email scandals, and now the Clinton Foundation scandals. And we're going to do numerous videos. You know the way JTF operates. I think you remember what we did in 2012 to Obama, and hundreds of our videos against him are still on YouTube, if anybody's interested. I mean, you could look at videos, and some of them have hundreds of thousands of views. Some of our anti-Obama videos have hundreds of thousands of views, or have over 100,000 views for some of our videos. So we're going to reach people, God willing, with the message. I hope we'll reach even more people than we did when we campaigned against Obama. But as we saw in our campaign against Obama, there's no guarantee. You know, Obama was reelected 51%, 47%. Mitt Romney got 47%. Obama got 51%. By 4 points, he was able to win, which shows that a swing of just 2.5 or 3%, and Romney would have won. A swing of just 2.5, 3% of the vote, Romney would have been president. So the election, was actually closer than people realize. With Hillary Clinton, I don't know. I don't know how close it's going to be. I don't know what the story is going to be. And I'm still assuming that she will be the Democrat nominee despite the scandals, because the Democrat Party is a party with no shame and no honor and no decency and no honesty. So I'm assuming she's still going to win the nomination despite all of this. And we're going to face her. We're going to be facing her next year in the race for president. And of course, as I was about to say, actually, before, in a few minutes ago, I was actually also about to say that as I've said on prior programs, we view the campaign not only as a campaign to decide who's going to be the next president, which obviously is enormously important. I mean, the very future of the world is at stake. But not only are we going to decide, not only are we going to hopefully influence who the next president is. Beyond that, we also view the campaign as an opportunity to educate people in the United States and in Israel. So campaigns are times when people pay more attention to these issues. People are more involved. They're more attuned to these issues. They're more interested in seeing what groups like us have to say. They're more interested in JTF when the election comes up, because they know JTF, or people find out from YouTube and from Facebook, they find out JTF is deeply involved in the election campaign. So people, naturally, much larger numbers of people, are interested in what our message is at a time like that. Obviously, JTF's message is not the conventional political message. We're much more, I think our videos and I think what we do is much more exciting, much more controversial, much more provocative. So I think that arouses interest in people. And again, if we can reach a lot of people, it could be a very important educational process, and it can make JTF a bigger and more important and more influential movement that could do good things for the future of America, Israel, and the world. So I think all of us understand the importance of this. All of us know what's at stake here. You're going to be seeing our videos coming out, where you're going to see me, God willing, doing interviews also on other programs. You're going to see me being interviewed, and you're going to see us forming alliances with people in order to try to defeat Hillary Sodom Clinton, whose real name should be Hillary Sodom Arafat, because her positions on Israel are the same as Arafat's position on Israel. You're going to see us doing all these interesting things, God willing, and hopefully we'll get the results that we want. So just for now, though, remember that if you start hearing about Zionists against Clinton, or you start seeing me being interviewed on other programs speaking about Zionists against Clinton, remember that we have two more domain names now, and ZionistsAgainstClinton.org, ZionistsAgainstClinton.com lead to our main news page, that great, fantastic main new news page that the great admin Shlomo has been preparing for us. So I certainly think it's an exciting period we're coming up to. And by the way, if any of you have interesting news, especially about the political process or about Israel, or if any of you have interesting news articles that you want to place on the main news page, you know, you can always submit them to us or contact us, and perhaps we'll have more news articles and more participation from great JTFers. But in the meantime, what can we all do as a team to make a difference? Number one, when you see our Hebrew and English videos, when you see us do videos that we put up on Facebook and on YouTube, please help promote those videos everywhere. Number two, we need your prayers. I should have made prayers number one, by the way. It's just that I unfortunately made a mistake. I wanted to make prayer number one. Prayer should always be number one. We need your prayers. We need your prayers to succeed here. Please pray for our success. The third thing is to join our news page. Maybe you want to write articles on our news page. You certainly, or maybe you want to just, you see an interesting article and you want to put, you think it should be put up on the news page. If you think so, you can contact us. But certainly you should comment on the news page. You definitely should check the news page every single day. Every single day, check the news page because Shlomo updates the news page every single day with very important articles. You're going to learn things on that news page. Every day you're going to learn things on that news page. And the cumulative effect of all the articles that you see submitted, you don't see that anywhere else. So you should go to that news page every day, comment on the articles. When you comment, that boosts us in the search engines. Your comments do go in the search engines. And bring other people to the news page that you think will be interested in it. Let's spread the word. Let's make that news page grow. We need your help with that. And the news page, of course, is jtf.org. And the fourth and final thing that we can do and that we all have to do that's very important and that's vitally important, of course, is the financial support we need. Obviously, the more financial support we get, the more people we're going to reach. And so checks, money orders, cash donations sent to our post office box make a big difference. Every donation makes a big difference. The more financial support we get, the stronger we are, the more people we reach, and the more our vital message gets across to people. So great JTFers who are generously supporting us by sending checks, money orders, cash donations to the post office box, God bless you. And please, let's continue to do that. That's very, very important. Other people may decide that they feel that it's more convenient to do it with their credit card online, which is also fine. We have a PayPal account, which you can do it with. You just go to our donate button on the Hebrew main page, on hayamin.org, on the Hebrew main page, on hayamin.org. You go to the donate button on top. It's in English, the donate button, and you click on the donate button, and in several minutes, very conveniently, very easily, you can make a credit card donation to JTF. And it does make a big difference. Every donation, every contribution makes a big difference. So please, let's all pitch in. Let's all work together as a team. Let's make a difference here because so much is at stake. So much for the future of the world is at stake. Let's not be like the generation before the Holocaust where the vast majority of people in that generation did nothing, were apathetic and indifferent, and certainly had to answer for that crime on the Day of Judgment. That's the worst thing you can do. I mean, a horrific, horrific thing to do when you know that people's lives are in danger and when people are actually being murdered during the Holocaust and doing nothing about it, which is what American Jews did during the Holocaust. That's a terrible, terrible crime. We can't be silent, and we're not going to be silent. We're going to speak out, and we're going to fight back, and we're going to do everything we can. We know how difficult it is, and we know what the odds are, but we believe in God. And we believe in the justice of our cause, and we're going to fight, and we're going to speak out, and we're going to bring the truth to people. And we as a team in JTF want to do this. We're going to march forward and do this. And God willing, we hope to have an impact ultimately on the process. We hope to be able to have the impact that we wish to have to make this a better world. God willing. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. Okay, let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, do you remember the Waco siege that occurred in 1993, unquote? Yes, of course I remember it. It was a terrible situation. The group that you had there was a cult. There's no question about it. It was a cult, and they were crazy, and they did crazy things. But to murder 76 people, the FBI fired on them and created a situation where they surrounded the compound, the Waco compound. And because of the FBI attack, a fire was set, and 76 people, many of them women and children, many of them little kids, were murdered in that attack. And that attack was ordered by Janet the Rhino, by Janet Reno, Attorney General Janet Reno, who was Bill Clinton's Attorney General. She was just an unbelievably evil, horrific woman, Janet the Rhino. An anti-Semite, of course, also, like everyone else in the Clinton administration. She was a Jew hater, naturally. And she attacked these people. She had the FBI attack them. She ordered them to do what they did. And 76 people were killed, including, you know, including little kids. Now, as weird as this cult was and as crazy as they were and some of their practices were crazy, you don't go and murder 76 people just because they have weird practices, especially when you have children involved here. You don't do something like that. But that was what they did at Waco, and it's one of the crimes that Bill and Hillary Clinton are responsible for. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the Columbine High School shooting on today's 16th anniversary? Thanks, let's go Mets, unquote. Okay, and April 20th is when Joe Gutfeld wrote that. That's why he wrote that it was the 16th anniversary. By the way, I'm just, you know, when people ask me about Waco and Columbine High School, it seems like yesterday these things happened, especially Columbine High School, because that happened in 1999. For me, I can't believe it. I say, wow, 16 years have passed already? How time goes by so quickly. How we should exploit every second of our lives to try to make this a better world, to try to do good things, to try to follow God's commandments and what God wants us to do. How short life is, how short. You know, I'm 58 years old now. I remember the time when I was always the kid in the Jewish movement, in the JDL. I was the 14, 15-year-old kid. And everybody always looked at me as look at this kid going around doing these things. I was always the kid. Now I'm 58 years old. Look at all the time that's passed. And all that seems like yesterday. Life just goes by so quickly. We Jews are the ultimate optimists, though. We believe in eternal life. We believe that if you do the right thing, you'll have a place in Olam Haba, the world to come. And in Olam Haba, there's Chayei HaNetzach, which means eternal life. So we are optimists. We're always concerned. I mean, I wouldn't be so presumptuous as to assume that I'm going to have or someone else is going to have a place in the next world, because who are we to make judgments about our own lives? But we hope, God willing, we hope to lead righteous enough lives so that we'll have a place in the next world. In any event, of course, I remember the Columbine High School shooting 16 years ago, and 12 students were killed, were murdered, and I think a teacher or principal, I don't remember, but school staff guy was also killed. 13 people were murdered by two students who were being drugged by their parents. You know, they give drugs now, they give all these drugs now to kids for all types of, for depression and this and that, and all types of drugs. And I'm not saying that drugs are always bad. Sometimes people need drugs. If someone is sick, they need drugs. But we over-medicate and we use drugs, and parents use drugs sometimes irresponsibly, and so do doctors. And anyway, these kids, the two kids who were the murderers, were raised, of course, in an immoral, sick society. They were given drugs, and they themselves were immoral, sick people who glorified Nazis and glorified evil things. And so, look at the consequences. 13 people were killed in a high school. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, discuss Arab-American, quote-unquote, Congressman Daryl Issa. Daryl Issa. Okay, let's start with that. He's an anti-Semite. He's pro-Arab. You know, the Republicans all love him because he pretends to be a Republican. He's not loyal to anything. He's part of the Republican establishment. He's a congressman from California, an Arab congressman from California. And of course, he's anti-Israel, pro-Arab. He's not really loyal to the United States. And if you're pro-Arab and pro-Muslim, that's loyal to the United States. The Arabs and the Muslims want to destroy America. So he's an example of the type of scum that you have in the Republican Party because the Republican establishment and the rhinos, that's what they prefer. They don't want someone like Ted Cruz, who really stands for something, who's an honest person and a God-fearing person. They'd rather have this Arab who hates Israel and who really has an agenda that is not good for that's very, very bad for America. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and Al-Asiri, the Saudi suicide butt bomber, unquote. Al-Asiri actually produced several terrorists in their family. It's a wealthy Saudi family. They're wealthy people. They were involved in the Saudi military. Their family were involved in the Saudi military, the so-called military. Their military is a joke. But they were involved in the Saudi army. And they produced Al-Qaeda terrorists, including the butt bomber who wanted to put a Muslim bomb up his behind. By the way, I don't think it's a bad idea to put bombs up the behinds of Muslims, but certainly not if they're going to use that to explode themselves around innocent non-Muslims. If they want to do that in their own mosque, I don't think that's a bad idea. But anyway, it's another example of how it's not caused by poverty and caused by deprivation. And these are wealthy, well-educated people who are part of the Saudi army. And it shows that Saudi Arabia is involved in all of this terrorism. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, how come Middle East History Month never discusses Phoenician, Zoroastrian, or Chaldean history? Those are monumentally important ancient Middle Eastern civilizations. Okay, that's, you know something? That is an excellent point. That is an excellent point, Lewinsky Stinks. These are civilizations, if we're talking about the Middle East history, the Phoenicians, the Zoroastrians, Chaldean history, all of these histories are vitally important to understanding what the Middle East was about, certainly in ancient times. And the only thing that is discussed in so-called Middle Eastern history in the United States involves Muslims. All Middle Eastern history now is Islamic. You cannot bring up anything. You're not allowed to discuss anything. You're not allowed to discuss anything about Jews. You're not allowed to discuss anything about Christians in the Middle East, all of whom had a tremendous influence on the Middle East. I mean, the Jews and the Christians had tremendous influence as well on the Middle East. None of that can be brought up. The only thing you're allowed to discuss is Islam and Muslims and Muslim and a distortion of Muslim history, and it's distorted in order to make the Muslims look like good guys. Absolutely. Very, very good point you're raising, Lewinsky Stinks. Very, very good point. You know, you're a smart guy, by the way. I have to say, you are a very smart guy, and you bring up some very, very good points. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, please say the following in a self-hating Jewish accent. It's almost Jewish American Heritage Month. Time to do some tikkun olam. Yeah, Jewish American Heritage Month. That's the Jewish establishment. And what do they do for Jewish American Heritage Month? They go and meet with Barack Hussein Obama and express support for Barack Hussein Osama, who's trying to destroy the Jewish people. That's what all the people who get the awards, and they always award the people who least deserve them, which is what all our Jewish establishment organizations do. Yeah. Well, as long as the UJA, which is the United Jihad Appeal, and the Federation, and AIPAC, and the ADL, and the AJC, as long as these groups are supposedly representing the Jewish people, this is what we're going to get. This is what we're going to get until JTF represents Jews. If JTF represents Jews, then, of course, it's going to be a whole different situation. What a better world. What a bright and magnificent world that would be. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you teach us something from Rambam? Thank you, unquote. there's so many things from Harambam. Harambam is Maimonides, of course. You know, one of the things, I think I mentioned this maybe a couple of years ago, but I think it's worth mentioning again. We have a story in the Bible where Avraham is Abraham was told by Hashem, by God, to do the Brit Milah, to circumcise himself and circumcise everyone with him, all the men with him. And so he's recovering from the circumcision. He's 99 years old, and circumcision is not an easy process for someone who's an adult. He's 99 years old, and he's recovering from the circumcision. He's sitting outside of his tent and recovering from circumcision, and three men come up to him and greet him, and he starts speaking to them, and he wants to help. And he runs out, and he immediately wants to feed them and get them, because he's always trying to spread monotheism. He's trying to spread the concept that there's only one God, and this is what Abraham's life was devoted to. So he meets these three men, and it's widely believed that these were three angels, and they in fact were. There's no question they were three angels, because they then explain to Abraham that they're going to destroy that their task is to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and they bring to Abraham news and prophecy. Now, Harambam Maimonides says something very interesting here. And it's a machloket, it's a disagreement among Chazal, among the rabbinic scholars. But Harambam says these three angels and Abraham meeting these three angels and that whole story was in fact a prophetic dream. He said it was a dream. It didn't happen while Abraham was actually awake. And why would he say that? Because according to Harambam, according to Maimonides, and this is, by the way, this is disputed. I'm going to explain in a moment how this is disputed by Haramban with a nun at the end, and other rabbinic scholars say they don't agree with this interpretation. But Maimonides, Harambam, with a mem, Harambam says that it was a prophetic dream, and it had to be, because angels are spiritual beings. Angels do not have any physical presence. They are not physical beings, according to Harambam. They cannot become physical beings. They cannot enter the physical world. Angels are strictly spiritual beings. Angels are only spiritual. And if Abraham was seeing these angels, that means he was seeing spiritual beings, not seeing something that's physical, and he could see something that's spiritual. That means that he was seeing them as a prophet. Only a prophet can see things that are spiritual, that are not physical. That's not something that's not part of the physical world. Something that's only part of the spiritual world, only a prophet can see that. Only a prophet can view that. Or someone who's seeing, or someone who has a prophetic vision, only he can see it. And because all the prophets, other than Moshe Rabbeinu, other than Moses, they got their visions in dreams. When they had their prophetic visions, it was in while they were dreaming, not while they were awake. Because of that, except for Moses, Moses had prophetic vision even when he was awake. Because of that, Abraham had to have been dreaming, and this was a prophetic dream when he sees the three angels. And all of this is a prophetic dream, and the whole story of the angels going to Lot, and Lot in Sodom, and saving Lot's family, and how they did it, and so on, that all of that was prophetic. All of that is prophecy, prophetic, all of that is prophetic dreaming, according to Harambam, according to Maimonides. Now, it's all true, it all took place, but it took place within the context of a dream, within the context of the spiritual world. That's what Harambam Maimonides tells us. Harambam, there's Harambam with a mem at the end, and there's Haramban with a nun at the end. Okay, in English, Harambam with an M at the end, the letter M. Haramban, who came after him, was with an N at the end, a nun, an N at the end of his name. Haramban and others dispute that interpretation. They say, no, that's not true. The three angels did physically appear. Angels can become physical. They can have a physical being. And Abraham was actually awake, and it was during the day. And it's not true that he was dreaming, and it was just a prophetic dream. So there's just an interesting little tidbit about the type of interesting perspective that Harambam brings to the stories of the Tanakh, of the Bible, and all the other things that we discuss as part of Torah Judaism. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, curse these two Muslim-loving Jewesses, Ilona Gerbacher and Ruth Lamdan. Shem Reshaim Yirkav. May their names and memories be obliterated. May the memory of the wicked rot. Who are these people? Okay. Ilona Gerbacher, she's someone who writes books and has written glowingly about Nazi Islam. She's always defending Nazi Islam. In fact, this a Jewish woman, she loves Islam so much, she learned how to speak Arabic fluently and became a scholar in Arabic and moved to Qatar and then to Morocco. She spent years living in Qatar and Morocco. She lived in these two Arab Muslim Nazi countries and spends her time praising Nazi Islam and writing books about Nazi Islam. Can you imagine this beast? And then Ruth Lamdan, she's another traitor who, of course, a left-wing, self-hating, vile traitor, supports the Muslims and supports all the enemies of the Jewish people, naturally. Her father, by the way, worked for the British Nazis, who murdered 6 million Jews. When the British Nazis murdered 6 million Jews during the Holocaust by deliberately closing the doors to the land of Israel, the Jews could have escaped Nazi Germany and could have gone into the land of Israel and would not have been murdered. But the British Nazis closed the doors to the land of Israel, made it impossible for the Jews to escape, cut off their only escape route so that they were trapped in Nazi Germany and burned and gassed in the Nazi death camps, thanks to the British Nazis. And so Etzel, which is the Irgun Tzvai Leumi, the organization Etzel, an organization of Jewish freedom-fighting heroes, they blew up the King David Hotel, which was the headquarters for the British Nazis. And 91 people were killed in that bombing in 1946 of the King David Hotel. And one of the people killed, not only were British officers killed, not only were members of the British empire that had pursued policies that led to the Holocaust, not only were they killed, but among the 91, there were also Arabs killed, of course, and there were Jews. There were also Jews who worked for the British who were killed, including Ruth Lamdan's father. He was there and he was killed. He was one of the people killed in that bombing. Baruch Hashem, thank God that the world got rid of that filth, that piece of filth. He loyally served the British Nazis against his fellow Jews and was working for them. And she said, "These terrorists, these horrible terrorists, it's terrible." She wants the 91 animals who were killed. Most of them were animals. Most of them were animals. There may have been a few people who were killed who I wouldn't include in that category. I don't know all 91, but the vast majority who were killed were definitely animals. Is it possible there was a few innocent people among the 91? It is possible. But even that, by the way, the British Nazis were responsible for that, because the Irgun warned, they warned people to evacuate the hotel. They warned people that the hotel was going to be blown up. And the British deliberately kept that from people and ignored that and created a situation where all those people were going to be blown up and killed. It was the British Nazis who were responsible for that. But anyway, that's Ruth Lamdan. Yimach Shma v'zichra Hashem Reshaim Yirkav. So certainly those two deserve to be cursed. And now Smash Islam writes, discuss Almohads. Okay, several people here. The Almohads were the Berber Muslims from North Africa who slaughtered huge numbers of Jews, entire Jewish communities, brutally, mercilessly slaughtered Jewish men, women, and children. Berber Schwarze Muslims from North Africa, Yimach Shmam v'zichram. They just went in and commit the worst atrocities against Jews, forced Jews to convert to Islam. Those Jews who refused were murdered, and many did refuse. Really a horrible, an example of what Islam did to the Jewish people. And Smash Islam asks about Al-Hakam II and his son, Hisham II. Well, Al-Hakam II was a Muslim homosexual ruler in the Iberian Peninsula. He was one of the Muslim rulers over the Iberian Peninsula, a major Muslim ruler over 1,000 years ago. And he was an open homosexual. He actually had a harem of homosexuals and openly was engaged in homosexual behavior. And he was considered to be a great Muslim scholar. Muslims all over the Muslim world thought he was very scholarly in his reading of Islam and everything else. And he's an open homosexual with a harem of homosexuals running like a whorehouse for homosexuals openly. Just typical of the insanity of Islam. And his son Hisham II. He waged wars against Christians. I don't know as much about his son, but I know that he waged wars against Christians, and he also ruled for a while, and then eventually was, I think he was killed by his fellow Muslims, if I'm not mistaken, which is also not unexpected. You know, when you shake hands with a Muslim, you have to count your fingers. And finally, Smash Islam asks about the Barbary Pirates. Barbary Pirates is something not many people know about. Many people might have heard about the Barbary Pirates, but they actually were Muslim terrorists who used to kidnap people, obviously, on the high seas. They seized thousands of ships, and their goal was to take Christian slaves. If there were Christians on those ships, or non-Muslims, or Christians or non-Muslims on those ships, they made them slaves. Over 1 million slaves were seized on the high seas by the Barbary Pirates for the Muslim world, Muslim nations throughout the Muslim world. Over 1 million people were enslaved after being kidnapped on the high seas. And this went on for many, many years. Thousands of ships were seized over the years. And so it was a huge slave trade and kidnapping racket that these Muslim pirates engaged in. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Are all Jews who call themselves gay automatically self-hating Jews?" Unquote. No, I wouldn't say that. We had a couple on our forum. We had a couple of people on our forum who unfortunately have this problem. If someone is a homosexual and genuinely wants to change their ways and does not engage in this behavior, like any other person with any other sinful tendency, of course we welcome them, and in the Jewish faith we believe that homosexuals can change, and they certainly can control their behavior, which is an abomination unto God. It's a toivah. God does not compromise on this issue. It is a toivah. It's an abomination. Jews and Gentiles are not allowed to engage in this behavior. The Gentiles also are not permitted to engage in this behavior. Sodom and Gomorrah were Gentile nations that God destroyed. So this is not just for the Jews, this rule. It's absolutely forbidden for anyone. God does not want his creation engaging in this type of abnormal, deviant, perverted behavior. But no, if someone happens to have this problem, but they want to change and they're not interested in becoming part of the so-called gay lifestyle, if they want to change and they're committed to changing, no, they're not self-hating Jews. And if they're not against their own people, you know, the leaders of these movements, all these homosexual movements, are also, not only do they want to destroy the Jewish people spiritually and get the Jewish people to do something that is an absolute abomination to God. Not only do they want to destroy the souls of Jews, they want to destroy Jews physically. They support the Arabs and they support the destruction of Israel, all the homosexual organizations. So, you know, obviously those types are self-hating. The so-called gay activists and the people who justify it and the people who are part of that movement, they are self-hating. They automatically are. If you're part of that, then you are self-hating. But if you want to change and you understand that this is a problem and you're loyal to the Jewish people, no, you would not be a self-hating Jew, even if you happen to have this unfortunate problem. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we should be compassionate. We should try to help people that are in that situation, just like we try to help drug addicts who want to change, and we try to help alcoholics who want to change, and we try to help compulsive gamblers who want to change, and we try to help... We try to help other people. We try to help heterosexuals who attempted to commit adultery, God forbid. We want them to change. So, you know, of course, we want people to do the right thing. And if someone wants to do the right thing and is committed to doing the right thing, even if they have bad tendencies, then of course they're not self-hating Jews. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We now go to Truth Seeker or T-Seeker, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, a prospect of a Jewish prime minister in the UK next week, not overly pro-Israel, though, unquote. Very, very true. In fact, the head of the Labour Party is a self-hating Jew. He's not just not overly pro-Israel, he's anti-Israel. He's a self-hating Jew. He's a nightmare for the Jewish people. And God willing, I hope for that reason that the Tories win the election. I don't like any of the parties running. I think they're all phonies. But I very much want the Tories to win the election because I don't want this self-hating Jew from the Labour Party to become the Prime Minister. Because that would be a real chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name. It would be a disgrace. We don't want these Jewish politicians taking over countries or having political power in non-Jewish countries. We don't want that to happen. Because, first of all, they always stab their own people in the back. And they're always traitors to the Jews. They're always self-hating Jews. They're always bending over backwards to show that they're not loyal to their own people. They're cowardly scum. These politicians, they're slime and they're cowardly scum, and we don't want them to win. And when a Jewish politician runs, we almost always, 99.9% of the time, we oppose them when a Jewish politician runs. And this animal running in the head of the Labour Party in Britain is certainly an example. I mean, just a vicious enemy of Israel, always has been an enemy. His brother is a Jewish anti-Semite as well. The whole family are just the low-life traitors to the Jewish people. Thank you, Truth Seeker. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, discuss, Warren Christopher, Bill Clinton's first Secretary of State. Warren Christopher was an anti-Semite, like everyone in the Clinton administration. Together with Clinton, he pursued the Oslo agreements. It was actually the self-hating Jews in Israel that created Oslo. It wasn't any foreign powers. Yitzhak Rabin, Shimon Peres, Yimach Shman V'Zichram, and all these other traitors, they created the Oslo surrender process. But the Clintons and Warren Christopher did everything possible to push this forward, to continue with this. They were thrilled that Israel was committing suicide. And, of course, Warren Christopher, whenever he had the chance, it was always a nonstop push to get Israel to commit suicide. That was what characterized his time as Secretary of State, a real Jew hater. Two, Madeleine Albright. She's even worse because she was someone who was actually Jewish, but who pretended she wasn't Jewish and claimed not to know about her Jewish background until the news media exposed it. And she was a complete liar. She knew that she was Jewish. She knew her family was Jewish. She knew her name was Jewish. She knew everything. She knew that she came from a Jewish background, but she claimed, I never knew. You know, she tried to hide it, this filthy, just an ugly, filthy beast. An ugly, filthy beast. She was Secretary of State, for those who don't know, during Clinton's administration. You know, Bill and Hillary and her did everything they could when Netanyahu was elected in 1997 to pressure Israel to commit suicide, and they pushed the Y agreement, they pushed Netanyahu to retreat from all of Hebron, with Netanyahu, shame on him that he gave in to this pressure and agreed to do all of that. But she's a typical example. John Kerry's another one, you know, that his father's family comes from his Cohen. His father's family's Cohen. His father's family has a Jewish background on his father's side, and he did everything he could to hide that. You know, these are the Jews in hiding, the hiding Jews, who are ashamed to be Jewish and who try to destroy their own people. And, of course, that's the type of Jews that the Clintons attract. And Binyamin now writes, three, William Perry, Bill Clinton's first defense secretary. Okay. Well, William Perry, again, that's, you know, it's a continuation of the same policies. He was hostile to Israel, pressured Israel all the time, did everything he could to undermine Israel in terms of the military relationship between the United States and Israel. He was like everybody else in Clinton's evil administration. And all the Jews, they love Clinton. They love Clinton. They supported Clinton. Even though he was an anti-Semite. His vicious wife, of course, has always been an anti-Semite. And everyone in his administration were anti-Semites. Binyamin now asks about four. William Cohen, in quotes. Bill Clinton's defense secretary of Semitic extraction. Yes, William Cohen, his father was Jewish, mother not Jewish, so he's not Jewish, but because of his father, he has that blood in him, that self-hating blood in him because his father was Jewish. Very hostile to Israel, always trying to stab Israel in the back, trying to do everything he could to hurt Israel. And, you know, and all these people, by the way, were also, of course, traitors to America. That goes without saying. All of them were. And then Binyamin writes five, Janet the Rhino. Well, Janet the Rhino, we spoke about her with Waco. She was the Attorney General of the United States, a lesbian and an anti-Semite. She refused to prosecute. She didn't want to prosecute the murderers of Rabbi Meir Kahana, and so they went on to bomb the World Trade Center in 1993 because of her. Because of her and Bill and Hillary Clinton refusing to prosecute Rabbi Kahana's murderers for civil rights violation. By the way, you can if you violate someone's civil rights by murdering them, you get life in prison without parole. So we were pushing for that. They refused to do that until the World Trade Center was bombed in 1993. I mean, they were responsible for many, many terrible things. And Janet the Rhino was right in there with them because Janet the Rhino was, you know, another immoral, evil lesbian, just like Hillary Clinton is an immoral, evil lesbian. And Binyamin now writes six. Joshlin Elders, Clinton's affirmative action surgeon general who supported teaching masturbation, unquote. Yeah, she's a disgusting, immoral, nasty individual who also was trying to do everything she could to bring down the morals of the United States and just do. The whole focus of that administration is to drag down America spiritually, religiously, physically, militarily, economically. I mean, just drag everything down. That was what they were all about. That was what that administration was all about. Thank you, Binyamin. We go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom, what are your thoughts on Mezvinsky's marriage to Hitler's Shiksa daughter, unquote. I think it's terrible. What Hiram is referring to is the fact that Hillary's daughter, Chelsea, oh, is she ugly, by the way. Phew. Hillary's daughter, Chelsea, is married to a self-hating Jew. The Mezvinsky family from Pennsylvania are self-hating Jews, always were self-hating Jews. Mezvinsky, the mother, was in Congress. She was a self-hating Jew in Congress. Just disgusting people. Of course, when you have Jews marrying, intermarrying, naturally that's very, very bad in and of itself. And here you have an example of them marrying into this very powerful family. They're self-hating, and they push like everybody else. They're going to be pushing against Israel and working against Israel, even though they're Jewish. So, of course, it's disgusting. It's terrible. It's just another example of why the Clintons, why we should do everything we can to defeat them. Thank you, Hiram. We go now to Gimatria's Girl, and welcome to the forum, Gimatria's Girl. Gimatria's Girl writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what is your opinion of Jews in America who send their children to public school? Is it chovah, an obligation, to send our kids to yeshiva where possible, unquote? First of all, it's a chovah to live in Israel. I have to say that. Jews are not allowed to live outside of Israel. We have a Jewish homeland, and it is a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel. It says in the Talmud that he who lives outside the land of Israel, it is as if he has no God. He who lives in the land of Israel is as if he has a God. It also says that living in the land of Israel is equal to all the other mitzvot in the Torah. So we have an obligation to live in the land of Israel. If someone does not live in the land of Israel, which is unfortunate, very bad, but if someone does not live in the land of Israel and they have children, of course they should send their children to a yeshiva. Of course they should. Sending them to public school means that they're going to be brainwashed and that they're going to be introduced to, to all types of horrific, immoral things, the worst immoral things imaginable. You know, Johnny has two daddies or two mommies, and, you know, just constant brainwashing for everything immoral and everything evil. So, of course, why would anybody put their children in a situation like that? So, of course, if someone's going to live in America, and it's not good to live outside of Israel, but if someone's going to live in America, certainly the children should go to a yeshiva, a Jewish religious school. Thank you, Gimatria's Girl. And we go now to Baltimore, who writes, and I quote, What would you do if you were at a Yom Ha'atzma'ut event, that's the Israel Independence Day event, that was interrupted by self-hating Jewish Nakba protesters, unquote. Okay, the Nakba is the Arabic word for catastrophe, and what they're referring to is the creation of Israel. They say the creation of Israel was a catastrophe. And self-hating Jews decide that they're going to start protesting and agreeing that this was a catastrophe, that the Arabs didn't succeed in wiping all the Jews out and having another Holocaust in the Middle East, because that's what Nakba means. Nakba, the Arabs mourn the fact that they were defeated in the wars and were unable to wipe the Jews out and exterminate them. That's what the Nakba is. And you have self-hating Jews that agree with that. If there are no police around, I think that they should be beaten. I think they should be physically beaten. That's what I think should happen to them. I think they should be beaten up, in my opinion. Thank you, Baltimore. I mean, these are vicious traitors. I think even worse should happen, but I wouldn't want anybody to get into serious trouble. I mean, they deserve, under Jewish law, they deserve to be put to death. Traitors to the Jewish people deserve to be put to death under Jewish law. But of course, we're a law-abiding movement, a law-abiding organization. So we wouldn't want anybody to have to get into serious trouble, because these people aren't worth getting into such serious trouble for. So we wouldn't advocate actually doing that, in under the circumstances that we live in our society today. But certainly, people they should get a beating if they go to a demonstration. I mean, they're calling for the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the Jewish people. Thank you, Baltimore. We go now to Ephraim Ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about this Jade Helm 15 stuff? You think it is real or just a conspiracy? I have seen some of this equipment in different sheriff's departments in the mid-states, unquote. Now, this is, you know, the people were saying that this summer, for those of you who don't know what this is, it's one of the internet things, the conspiracy, it is a conspiracy thing. They're saying this summer that we're going to have martial law, that they're preparing martial law. That's complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. And you'll see if I'm right this summer. It's just nonsense. It's ridiculous. You know, the people that push these things, these conspiracy theories, the real conspiracies, they don't know. What's the sign of a true paranoid person? A paranoid person, someone who has the mental illness of paranoia, is someone who doesn't know their real enemies. When their real enemies come, a paranoid person trusts them. A paranoid person will trust their enemies. But when their friends or people who actually love them or care about them come, those are the people that they're paranoid about. That's the true sign of a person who has the illness of paranoia. And, you know, Alex Jones, the Jew hater, the Jew hating Nazi, and these other conspiracy people, they push conspiracy theories that are insane and absurd and ridiculous and laughable, and cover up for the real conspiracy. The real conspiracy is that multinational corporate America controls the United States government with big money. They own the news media. They control the United States government. Politicians don't dare go against their agenda. And they are in cahoots with the Muslim terrorist world, because they want to do business with Saudi Arabia and with Iran and with all the other Muslim terrorist countries. That is a real conspiracy. They're destroying the United States, destroying the Western world, of course, endangering Israel. They're doing all of this. That is a real conspiracy. That is really happening. But you never hear Alex Jones speak about that. Never. In fact, if someone speaks about that, Alex Jones will defend the Muslims. He'll defend and go against that, because he says you're just warmongering. You just want to start wars. I mean, you know, it's incredible that, and the establishment likes these people that come up with crazy conspiracy stuff. Why? Because if people come up with crazy conspiracy stuff, there's going to be martial law this summer. When people come up with these crazy things, and that is crazy. When people come up with this stuff, then it doesn't happen, everybody thinks that, this is all nonsense. So when the real conspiracy comes, people cried wolf so many times that nobody will believe us. When the real time comes for a real conspiracy, by the way, allowing Iran to go nuclear, that is a conspiracy. That's a conspiracy to endanger the lives of millions of people who will be endangered with the prospect of a nuclear holocaust. That is real. That is real. And those types of policies were pursued before 9/11. That's why we had 9/11. That is real. But when the real conspiracies come, you never see these people make warnings about that. Never. Only insane things that are crying wolf or that are predicting things that are nonsense or saying things that are nonsense. And they discredit those of us that are trying to warn, that are trying to warn people about the real threats that we face. Thank you, Ephraim. And we go now to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Chaim Shalom, your thoughts about Professor Amir Chetzroni, may Hashem bless you, Edward, unquote. For those of you who don't know, Professor Amir Chetzroni is one of these professors who made anti-Sephardic racist remarks after the election because the Sephardic Jews voted overwhelmingly for the Likud and for Netanyahu. And so the leftists who have always hated the Sephardic Jews, have always been anti-Sephardic racists, they made remarks that would finish them off. That, in fact, they would be facing possible prosecution for incitement. They'd actually, in Israel, you go to jail if you say certain things about Arabs or Muslims. You're not allowed to. They'll put you in jail. If you say the wrong thing about Arabs and Muslims, it's a hate crime. They'll put you in jail. But this animal can say this about the Sephardic Jews, who are about half of the Jews in Israel. Sephardic Jews, by the way, are the Jews that came from Muslim countries, Arab countries, and third world countries, came into Israel. And they tend to be more right-wing because they lived under the Muslims. They know what Muslims are like. They know what Islam really is. So they are more right-wing. They're more normal. And so this animal professor goes on TV, Amir Chetzroni, who's just left this scum. He goes on TV and he says Moroccan Jews should have stayed in Morocco. Makes racist remarks against the Moroccan Jews. The Moroccan Jews are the largest community of Sephardic Jews. And this is the type of anti-Sephardic racism that we've always had on the left. By the way, he is a professor at Ariel University, which is supposed to be a right-wing university in Judea and Samaria. You know, again, but it's controlled by the establishment, so it's all BS. It's all a bluff. And he's a professor there, and he goes on television, and he's allowed to walk around in Israel and say what he wants and do what he wants. He can do all of that. I'm not even allowed to set foot in Israel while this racist pig who hates his own people is a professor and is able to teach students and get all these other positions in Israel. I'm not even allowed to set foot in Israel. What an amazing situation we have. What an upside-down generation we live in. Everything is upside down. Only injustice, only wrong things are glorified. Everything wrong is glorified and supported, and everything right and just is suppressed. And people who stand for right, for the right things and for justice are persecuted. That's the generation we live in. And that's what JTF wants to change. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. Thank you, Edward. And we go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, one, fakestinians and self-hating Jews unfurl fakestinian flag at Bergen-Belsen on Yom HaShoah, unquote. That's just unbelievable that the Jewish people tolerate this. I mean, they tolerate these things. I mean, that's like putting up a swastika in the Bergen-Belsen being the Nazi concentration camp. That's like putting up a swastika on Yom HaShoah on Holocaust Day. And this is, you know, the Jews tolerate this, and this is why, you know, we tolerate self-hating Jewish traitors in our midst. The Arabs and the Muslims treat their traitors the way a normal people treats traitors. They deal with their traitors the way a normal people they consider to be traitors. Regardless, they do what normal people do to people who are traitors. What a shame that the Jews don't treat traitors like a normal people should treat traitors. What a shame. Nekama now writes, two, Arabs in Israel demand to rebuild 1948 villages destroyed, unquote. Yeah, of course, because they want to, you know, the Arabs, first of all, I don't know what villages they're referring to, but the Arabs naturally want to take over Israel and want to destroy Israel. They don't hide that. They don't have to hide it. They have Arab members of the Knesset who openly proclaim that they're against the Jewish state and that they think Israel should be destroyed. And again, they sit in the Knesset and they have all these rights, and they sit on the Supreme Court of Israel. We have Arab Muslim Nazis on the Supreme Court in Israel. They sit on the Supreme Court. They're part of the news media. They're allowed to do everything they can. They're the students at universities. They get scholarships that Jewish students don't get. They're allowed to do anything they want. They build homes illegally anywhere where they wish. Whereas Jews who build legally have their homes destroyed. Even if a Jew builds legally in Judea and Samaria and has permission, eventually their home is destroyed by the government, by some government edict. And I'm not allowed to step foot into Israel. Rabbi Kahana was banned from running. I mean, that's the type of Israel we're talking about. That's the upside down world that we have to change. If we don't change it, obviously, we're not only is it a terrible injustice and a disgrace, but obviously our future is gravely endangered if we don't change the world. And that's what JTF exists to do, to change this, to rectify this injustice and stand for what's right. Thank you, Nekama. And we go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss the situation regarding the American Sniper movie, particularly on many college campuses," unquote. First of all, I have not seen the American Sniper movie. I don't know if it's a good movie, bad movie. I have no idea. I've heard some people on the right saying that they don't even think it's a good movie. They don't even like the movie. I've heard other people say that they do like it. So I haven't seen it, so I have no idea. I can't say what I think of the movie. But there are Muslims who don't like it. And so on many college campuses, the movie is banned because of Muslim Nazi censorship. The Muslim Nazis have decided that they're going to censor movies now. We're not allowed to see something that they don't like. I mean, it's unbelievable. First of all, why are there so many Muslim students on college campuses? What is this? Because there's affirmative action for the Arabs and the Muslims. There's an affirmative action program to attract them to colleges. The colleges want enemies of America and enemies of the Western world who want to destroy America. They want them to get scholarships and be on college campuses. You notice that? I mean, this is so sick. The mere fact that you have huge numbers of Muslim college students now. You go to any college, a huge numbers of them. And they now have veto power over what can be seen, what can be said. They censor. They're the new censors that can do. They can decide what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say, what you're allowed to show as a movie. You know, they're the new people that decide things. That's where this country is going. This is becoming just like Europe. In Europe, you dare say anything that the Muslims don't approve of, they put you in jail. that's what it's like in Europe. And the United States is moving in that direction, little by little. Actually, not little by little, pretty quickly. Thank you, EB22. And now Gimatria writes, and I quote, "Chaim HaTzadik, what are your thoughts on Peggy Tishman? Can you speak to her comments on the liberation of the camps?" Unquote. Peggy Tishman was the head of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, which is known as the UJA. We, of course, call it the United Jihad Appeal, which is the main fundraising arm of the self-hating Jewish establishment. They raise billions of dollars from all the self-hating Jews, from all the idiot Jews. Some of them are idiots, some of them are just evil, who insist upon giving to these intermarried, assimilated, self-hating, vile Jewish leftists. What did Peggy Tishman and the UJA Federation, what did they do? They were promoting a film that claimed that black soldiers liberated the concentration camps, black soldiers in World War II, and saved the Jews in the concentration camps. Complete lie. Complete lie. They had nothing to do with it. Black soldiers had nothing to do with this. But they lied and claimed that black soldiers came and liberated, because they want to make blacks into heroes among the Jews. Black anti-Semites. And when it was proven to her, it was clearly proven that this is a lie, that this is not true, that the film that she was promoting was a lie, and that what PBS, another evil anti-Semitic network, if you want to call it, I don't know if you'd call it a network, but it's a television network. PBS was promoting this. The New York Nazi Times, of course, promoted it. And when it was proven this was a lie, you know what Peggy Tishman said? She said, it doesn't matter if it's not true. We have to promote African Americans. We have to promote good relations with African Americans. It doesn't matter if it's not true. In other words, we have to lie. We have to lie in order to suck up to Jew-hating murderers. That's what Peggy Tishman says. Peggy Tishman, coming from the Tishman family, a billionaire family, rich, assimilated, self-hating, subhuman scum. And they're the ones who run the American Jewish community, and they're the ones who tell Netanyahu what to do in Israel because of all their money. They're the ones who are doing everything they can to undermine the Jewish people. And that's why JTF is so important. Thank you, Gematria. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.